You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, and the show is Melting Pot, and right now we have a guest in our studios, Ms. Zara McFarlane, all the way from the UK. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You have a new record that is, well, newish record, came out early in the year, but is something that I feel like we're going to be playing the entire year and for a long period of time. If You Knewer is the name of the record, and you're also going to play some songs for us today.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, I wanted just to throw it to you for a quick song, and then we'll have a little chat about this music. But right now, this is Zara McFarlane here on KPFK 90.7 FM.
This first track is the opening track of my new album, and it's called Open Heart.
Thank you.
So you just heard Zara McFarlane performing live here in our studios on our own piano with pianist beautiful Lincoln piano. Clary. Yeah, this is the first time actually I've been able to have somebody, one of the artists for my show, play on this piano, and man, it's pretty impressive.
It's a beautiful piano.
Yes.
Extremely. Well,
the music, the beautiful music helps as well. And it's truly beautiful music that you create. This is your second record, but for a lot of us, this was certainly a case with me. I think a lot of us have just kind of discovered you with this record, mm-hmm. as opposed to the debut. And I was wondering if you could say a little bit about your background and how you came into music. I know that you were raised on the borders of East London and Essex. And could you tell me a little bit about that background?
Yeah, well, my parents are Jamaican. Mm. They moved over to the UK separately and grew up in a place called Shropshire, which is outside of London in the Midlands, and then travelled down to London. And I kind of grew up listening to reggae music, obviously, as they're Jamaican. and I kind of got into jazz much later. I started writing songs at the age of about 11, just for fun. And I would try to put myself into competitions. I would try to ask to perform at school, different things like that. And as that kind of developed, I decided I wanted to get more involved in the performing arts. So I studied at a college called Brit School, which has had the likes of Leona Lewis, Amy Winehouse, Adele went there. And I suppose as that developed, I studied musical theatre there. After that, I studied a degree in popular music performance. Mm-hmm. And it was around that time that I got more involved in jazz music and jazz-influenced music, working with a few different bands in the UK, such as Tomorrow's Warriors and Jazz Jamaica. And from there, things kind of developed further. I started writing more of my own music and trying to get the opportunity to put that out there in a professional way. And Giles Peterson got to hear that music, and he kind of became an ambassador, I suppose, for my music almost,
yeah,
pushing me out there.
You signed to his record label, Brownswood. What,
that's correct.
What was that experience like? Because, I mean, Giles is a heavy hitter.
Yes. It was a surprise that he kind of took the music the way that he did and loved it in the way that he did and decided to release it. I met him originally at a place called the Southport Weekender, which is an event, a huge dance DJ crazy event that happens every year in the UK, and I performed on that event, performing some house music that I had written with a friend of mine. Hmm. So I met him for the first time there, though he'd heard my music before that, and he kind of offered to bring me onto his show in a similar way to this, I suppose, performing on his show and having a chance to chat with him and things. But that didn't actually happen. I kept trying to harass him to make that happen. It didn't happen. But in the end, instead, he said, you know, I really like what you're doing, and he wanted to release the album, which was a great surprise. And it's been a great opportunity working with him, because so many people know him worldwide and have a great respect for him and his opinion with regards to music particularly.
Yeah.
And that has helped me greatly with these two albums.
Yeah, yes, he has pretty fantastic ears. But I don't think that it was a hard job for Giles to figure out, you know, talent. as everybody, you know, who just heard you perform and has heard this record or is going to hear this record, can certainly attest to. One of the things that I'm somewhat interested, especially in you telling that story, and that kind of one of the first ways he heard you wasn't playing jazz, but was playing with a house band, is what do you think drew you to jazz, and especially to kind of writing songs and singing in jazz style? Mm.
Well, I think when I was studying at university, we had a module actually that was a jazz module. It wasn't a jazz course particularly, but one of my teachers was very complimentary of my voice in that style of music, and I actually ended up performing with him. He was a pianist and I was singing, and he would get me to perform with him in different restaurants and stuff like that. But prior to that, having studied musical theatre, I discovered when learning this jazz module that I knew much of the repertoire, because many jazz standards for singers, as you know, come from musicals. So I kind of already had that affiliation there. And then I would put myself into different jam sessions in the UK and in London and try to get more involved with the music in that way. And that's how I developed working with this particular band called Tomorrow's Warriors and Jazz Jamaica, to develop I ended up working with a lot of the top UK jazz musicians from having performed at the Jazz Cafe jam session.
Okay. And from the way you were talking about it a moment ago, kind of Giles Peterson coming on board and bringing you into the Brownswood fold, it seems like the debut record might have come together somewhat quickly, and that came out in 2011.
Yeah, well, basically that album, before that I'd recorded an EP.
Okay.
And that's what Giles had heard, was the EP, and it was, I actually recorded enough for an album, but I just put together an EP to be able to start showing people the music that I was creating. So much of that first album was recorded before I met Giles, actually, and then we did another session around the time that I met him as well. So I suppose that one was slightly different, the way it was put together, compared to this one, already mm-hmm. being more involved with Giles and knowing a bit more about how he works. And also he was pushing me in the sense of being able to be a bit more risk, taking a few more risks, I suppose, with my music, with regards to songwriting or with regards to collaborations, which perhaps I hadn't tried before. So that was nice.
Now, that first record, it seemed like you'd written most of the songs on the first record, as is the case with this one. But how did your kind of process, I'm always really fascinated by the kind of process of songwriting. But I'm wondering how, between that debut and this record, how the process of writing songs, shaping songs, how that changed for you?
It was very different, actually. With the first album, some of that material had been around for a long time, but it had been reshaped for the album. So, for example, I mentioned that I'd been performing some house tracks and written them with a producer. Some of those house tracks I reworked as jazz songs for the first album.
Very nice.
Then a couple of songs that I'd worked on years ago, I reworked, they'd already had different versions of them in the past, and then I kind of recreated them to work well with that first album. So that material, some of it was, I suppose, been around, but not a lot of people had necessarily heard it, but okay. It'd been around. Mm-hmm. But with this second album, most of that material is brand new. Mm. So it'd been written within the year or so before releasing this new album. And I kind of focused on each individual piece of music as an individual piece of music rather than as an album. So the first album, I really wanted to create a collection of songs that worked well as an album. Mm-hmm. And how I feel that I did that was through the instrumentation and the musicians that create kind of a seamless sound throughout the first album. With the second album, I wanted to focus on the lyrics and the melodies and the songs as emotional pieces of music that evoke some kind of emotion. And then I collected the pieces together that I think made sense with the theme that I had towards the end.
And with these songs, when they come to you, do they kind of come in, is it particular words that kind of come together first, or particular images, or maybe even sounds as opposed to words?
It varies. Sometimes I'll have a theme that I want to write about quite strongly, and I explore that through lyrics and then maybe come to some melodies. Sometimes I might have chords first and then melodies that I mess around with and then I put lyrics to it later. So I don't have a very strict process. It can be quite different the way these things come to me. Yeah.
Wanted to ask you especially about the song that you played for us today and that leads off the record, Open Heart. And the thing I think in that song that kind of grabs me the most is, you know, that line about how the open heart is both a lock and key. And I was really wondering if you could say a bit more about maybe about the inspiration, mm-hmm. but also just about how you feel the theme comes through in the song.
Okay. Well, for me, that song was written about an end of a relationship. And that idea of an open heart as both a lock and key means that once you've opened your heart to somebody, you will never open it up to somebody else again as openly as you did that first time. And I feel that is one of the, I don't know, it's hard to have a favourite actually on this album, but I suppose that song has been, out of all the songs so far on that album, it's one of the older ones, and it does mean a lot to me, that particular song. And I feel that the images that are created throughout it create a very strong sense of the emotions that I was feeling at the time.
Yeah, and it also really sets the tone for the record, you know, right. kind of as a listener, it puts you in a very kind of particular place, particular mindset. And it, yeah, I mean, the whole record is something else. But that song, and also the song Angie Lala, is one that also seems to stand out. There's a sound that I'm not even sure if it's your voice that makes the sound, but there's yeah, there's a couple sounds in that song that I didn't think were humanly possible. It's almost like a bird call with Leon Thomas yodeling. It's like Leon Thomas and Minnie Riperton got together in this little moment. Like you have to tell me more about both how the song came together and what possessed you to bring out that particular sound.
That's the sound that I used to make as a child, to be honest, just for fun. That track came together because it was originally a reggae track by a lady called Nora Dean. Mm. And I believe it was Lee Scratch Perry also that wrote that together. And it's kind of like the original is quite like a dubbed out psychedelic craziness. Mm-hmm. And that was shown to me originally by my manager just as a track to listen to. She used to be a DJ, so she's very familiar with all different styles of music. And she likes to pass on, as Giles does, songs for inspiration. Mm-hmm. And that was one of them. And then we decided that I would have a go at trying to do a version of it, because I enjoyed the idea of improvising and being able to use my voice in different ways as opposed to a song with lyrics for that song. And we got Laron Thomas involved from New York. And it kind of just developed. I just decided to try out a few things, explore a few things, explore a few melodies. I worked with a guy called Matt Hulsoul from the UK, who's also a trumpeter, but he kind of put the band together for that track. That's not my normal band that plays on that track. So you've got a few different things like harps and stuff on there as well, which is quite different for me. We explored and it worked out really, really nicely, I think.
more than nicely. I mean, it's pretty stunning, actually. I actually played it a little while ago on the show and had several people call up in a frenzy, like needing to know what was happening, who was this, that kind of thing. And again, I think it's representative of qualities that come throughout the record. But it is interesting, kind of these particular moments, how certain things kind of stand out a bit more than the rest. One of the other kind of standout tracks is also a reggae song. In this case, a straight cover, at least lyrically, though the sound is completely different.
Yeah.
Junior Mervin's Police and Thieves. How did that one come about?
Ooh, that was one that I explored because that's one of my favourite songs of all time, especially reggae songs. It's a song that I've listened to over the years from being a child and hearing that just in the house or at different weddings or whatever. And I wanted to explore, I think from working with this band called Jazz Jamaica that actually fused jazz and reggae, I decided I really wanted to do something similar myself. I was inspired by that. And this song came to mind because I loved the melody. I used to find it quite haunting. And as a child, I used to think it was a woman singing, actually, because his voice is so high. It wasn't until much later that I discovered it was a man singing that song. But I love the sentiment of the song and the melody and the shape of the melody, the fluidity of how he sings it as well. So I wanted to explore that, and I had ideas, some rhythmical ideas that I wanted to interject with the melody and see if it worked. I worked with my pianist on that. He helped me a bit more with the bass lines, but I had very strict ideas of what I wanted rhythmically within the piece and how it developed. And we tried it and we did it. And then I was a bit like, I'm not sure if I'm going to show anyone this because I don't know. You know, it's one of those iconic songs that people might have a love or hate, I suppose, that idea of covering a song as well and changing it. So for me personally, changing a song is why I'd want to do a cover, is to kind of do it my own way. But at the same time, there's pluses and negatives to that. So I was a bit like, oh, I don't know if I want to show anyone this. But I slowly started to show people like my manager and Giles and stuff, and had a really good response from people with it. So we worked with it with the band, and it's just really developed into something quite special. I think personally, I find it a great song to sing.
It's one of those things where you never think about kind of doing it as a, you know, you'd never think somebody doing a jazz version of it. And as soon as it's done, it's like, oh man, that made perfect sense. I don't why didn't anybody think about this before? Thank God Zara thought of it. It's really, really, really quite nice. It brings to mind a couple of potential questions. One of the things, just because you have a voice that within the context of these two records has been fairly explicitly connected to jazz as a particular style, but it's a voice that would find a happy home in a variety of different styles. And I wonder if it's do you plan to kind of stay and perform music as a jazz artist, or are you interested in incorporating all the variety of other styles you could potentially play?
I think for me at the moment, I really enjoy jazz music and jazz influenced music and using that within my music. And I hope to continue to do that. But also, I do enjoy other styles of music. As I mentioned before, you know, I study musical theatre. I also study popular music performance, which has everything such as blues, reggae, R&B, more traditional R&B, country, all sorts of things. That was part of that particular course, and I just love listening to popular music, pop music, different styles of music. So what I enjoy, particularly being signed with Giles's label, is the opportunity to do remixes and things and have my voice focused or used in a different way to the way that I would normally do it myself. And I am definitely open to exploring different styles of music. Like I suppose many artists are today. But I still think for me personally, jazz will still have a thread within majority of the things that I do, because I just genuinely love the idea of jazz music and improvising and swing feel and all those kinds of things as well. So
yeah. And the other question that was kind of popping to my mind as this conversation was going on, connected to kind of seeing you as a jazz artist, you know, like should we see you as a jazz artist? Should we see you as a singer? Like how important is it to you to have that particular genre kind of attached to your name? Because in some respects, in this year, there's been a lot of like really good jazz records, and they've all been kind of expanding on the vocabulary of jazz. You know, a lot of people felt like jazz dead in a variety of different periods of time, but clearly it's not, at least for people who pay attention to all these incredible younger musicians who are playing this music. Mm-hmm. And your music, though in some ways it seems straight ahead, there's so many other elements that kind of spring out of it that it, you know, it's not simply jazz.
No.
I feel like calling it just jazz doesn't quite work. So I'm wondering what you think about that.
Well, you know, I suppose as many artists might say, it's not always great to be locked down into one thing, because as a musician, you always want to challenge yourself and stretch yourself and learn more about music. And I see myself as a singer and a musician in that sense. So from that point of view, I want to explore all the things that I want to explore just for myself.
Yeah.
I suppose I try to focus on that more so than other people's labels of what I am. So I suppose if I had to choose, I'd prefer to be thought of as a voice and hope people would join me and travel with me in how the different ways that I may use my voice over the years.
I like the sound of that. And I'll take note and make sure that I heed that call. Is there a chance that we could hear that lovely voice perform a couple more songs for us?
Definitely.
Okay. We've been talking with Zara McFarlane here at KPFK. We're going to throw it over to her for a couple more songs.
Watch you patiently and quietly. They glance around the room unknowing. If you would only take the time, what it is you find is the strength behind them. Although they gaze into the distance, although they put up much resistance, can look straight into her eyes. Please don't be surprised by the strength behind there. Some say that is just a twinkle glistening in the light. I know that these precious jewels
I cannot see your face. I feel you. Your presence just entered this place. But I'll wait right here. See, there's no need for me to see. Were I to look back, I might just find myself falling slowly. Right into trouble. I see you. Don't lift your lids up to mine, no. It's too late. My heart's already seen your smile. Look what you're doing. Can't you see? Were I a blossom, I would be falling down from the tree, right into trouble, trouble, trouble. My breath. You're talking, but I'm not quite listening in yet. You get me in trouble. If only I allow myself to fall, you get me in trouble. If only I open my senses up to it all. Thank you.
So you just heard two more songs from Zara McFarlane here on KPFK 90.7 FM. Her new record is called If You Knew Her on Brownswood Recordings, and it is just as fantastic. No, she's even more fantastic live. I'm sorry you all can't be here. But at the same time, I'm really happy that I'm here and that you're here. So thank you so much for coming in, Zara.
Also. Thank you very much.
And big thanks to Stan Mizrahi for the sound. And of course, to Miss Zara McFarlane, who hopefully you saw perform while she was here in Los Angeles. We told you about it last week. But there you go. A fantastic performance here at KPFK from her. When this record that she's put out, If You Knew Her, it wasn't something we were actually able to get into the interview. It just happened spontaneously in conversation after we'd already, you know, recorded everything. But the record, If You Knew Her, is really in some ways inspired by a variety of people in her life, maybe even also her own life. And really that whole line, If You Knew Her, is about kind of delving a bit deeper into many of the stereotypes, misconceptions, particularly for Black women, but women more generally in society. And the idea, you know, if you knew her, you know, what would you find? And it's certainly a record to dig deep into. And you might be able to do that if you call me at 818-985-5735. I have three signed copies of Zara McFarlane's record, If You Knew Her, available for our KPFK listeners. Call right now, 818-985-5735, and I'll get that ready for you. Here now is a song we were talking about, Angie Lala, from this record, If You Knew Her, on KPFK and Melting Pot. Thank you.
my love for Jay, my pleasant space, secret liar. Where have you been all my life? Where have you been all my life? This house of jade, this pleasant space, secret liar, secret liar. This house of jade, this pleasant space, secret life, secret life, secret life. Thank you.
Senor Blues is what they call him. Way down Mexicali way, senoritas falling for him, with the hope that he will stay. By the time that they love him, Senor Blues done gone away. Well, he's tall and good looking, and he always knows just what to say. Yes, he's tall and good looking, and he always knows just what to say. By the time that they love him, Senor Blues done gone away. I don't know why. I'm a wandering guy, with no one gal to lay my head by. Ooh, I'm so tired and lonely and blue, 'cause the one gal I love won't be true. Got the blues and it's all 'cause of you. Got the blues and it's all 'cause of you. Mexicali way, senoritas falling for him, with the hope that he will stay. By the time that they love him, Senor Blues done gone away. Well, he's tall and good looking, and he always knows just what to say. Yes, he's tall and good looking, and he always knows just what to say. By the time that they love him, Senor Blues done gone away. I'm a wandering guy, with no one gal to lay my head by. Ooh. Cause the one gal I love won't be true. Got the blues and it's all cause of you. Got the blues and it's all cause of you.
Music for Horace Silver, who passed away at the age of 85 earlier in the week. Just a monster contribution to music, one of the most soulful piano players of all time. You heard one of his signature tracks, Senor Blues, a vocal version of that, which was recorded in 1958 with Bill Henderson on the vocals. You can find it on 45 or on a Japanese issue record of the same title, Senor Blues. Also in a set, music from Miles Tackett and the Three Times. His new record is called The Fool Who Wanders. It'll be released in early July, and there'll also be a release party for that. Everything, the name of the song you heard from Miles Tackett. We had music from Bad Bad Not Good from their record 3, Triangle, the name of the song. One of my favorite records of the year, and one of just a slew of great jazz records, including from Zara McFarlane, featuring Leron Thomas on Angie Lala from the record If You Knew Her. If you missed parts of the interview, it will be archived on our website, meltingpotblog.com, starting tomorrow. I actually still have a CD of Zara's to give away if you want to call 818-985-5735. And other than that, I will see you next week, hopefully along with Nick Waterhouse, to play you some vinyl. Folk Scene's up next. Y'all take care.